So, Hare Krishna, should we begin? Okay. I forgot your name. Your name? Ramakeshava. Okay, Ramakeshava Prabhu has a question concerning the last verse. You remember?
Yeah.
Okay. Not bad, because somebody told me that in ISKCON everyone comes half an hour too late. So it's, the attendance is quite punctual. Okay, Ramkeshav. In spiritual world?
Yeah, like how does it work? Like if in the material world so humanizes consciousness, how does it happen in the spiritual world? It's a very question.
Yeah, in spiritual world everything is conscious. In the spiritual world everything is conscious. Because there, that is the world of consciousness. Right? And say, for example, in the material world, matter is unconscious. But when the soul takes some matter, as in the form of his body, then that body becomes conscious. Right? But that is not the case in the spiritual world. In spiritual world, every single body, is spiritual. Therefore, everything there is conscious. They may appear to be like inert, but they all are conscious. For example, the pillows in spiritual sky is conscious. And sometimes the pillow thinks that I'm always at Krishna's head, and I never get a chance to serve his lotus feet. So, the pillow moves from Krishna's head to his feet. It happens that way. And Vishakha Devi makes Krishna's bed, and one day Lalita Devi came and saw that the pillow is at Krishna's feet. So she got angry and she chastised Lalita. Lalita, what happened? You lost your mind? Instead of putting a pillow towards Krishna's head, you put it at his feet? Then they found out it was not Lalita Devi, it is Mr. Pillow who actually did that. Also, there is a description, in Vrindavan, all the trees, they are conscious. Here also, trees are conscious, but they're conscious, there is very little consciousness. But there, the trees are fully conscious. And they wait when Krishna is going to come, And as soon as they see Krishna, they become so ecstatic that immediately the tree becomes filled with flowers. Immediately. So that is how the spiritual sky is. So there, that is the meaning of spiritual body. There, the bodies are not made of matter and animated by spirit soul. There, all bodies are spiritual bodies. Like a tree body, plant body, river body, not only human body or animal body, bird body. They all are spiritual bodies.
How do you understand that the soul is one of the thousands of people with earth, the dimension, and at the same time, you know, the spiritual world? The whole body is spiritual.
Yeah. You see, 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair actually means it's immeasurable. You cannot really measure it. Can you measure 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair? And then also you can consider, are all the hair have the same density or same size? Tip of the hair. Some hair is thin hair, some hair is thick hair. Right? So which hair are you talking about? A person with thick hair, does it mean that his spirit soul has a larger size? So 1,000 part of the tip of the hair means it's materially incalculable. And what actually happens, the spiritual body is synonymous or relative to service to Krishna. Right? In the spiritual sky, everybody has a spiritual body to serve Krishna. Now, when one stops to serve Krishna, then the spiritual body, you can say shrinks, yeah, or disappears, so to say. Shrinks will be a better expression. Like, for example, I stop serving Krishna with this hand, so the hand disappears. I stop serving Krishna with this hand, the hand disappears. I stop serving Krishna with my legs, the leg disappears. I stop serving Krishna with my head, the head disappears. I stop serving Krishna with my belly, the belly disappears. I stop serving Krishna with my chest, the chest disappears. Just to, you know, give a graphic example. So the body disappears, spiritual body disappears, and becomes a tiny little spiritual spark. Right? Now, consider what happens in devotional service. We start to serve Krishna with hands, then the hands start to become spiritualized. We start to serve Krishna with our legs, or we engage our legs in Krishna's service, the legs become spiritualized. And in this way, all the limbs become manifest due to our service to Krishna. So stopping spiritual activities causes the spiritual body to disappear, and engaging ourselves, our limbs, in service to Krishna causes the spiritual body to become manifest.
So, if in the spiritual world, is it that the soul becomes a tree, or, you know, I've heard the Srila Prabhupada said that the soul has a human-like form, and this material body is cut like shirt and pants and so on to fit the soul. So, you know, if the soul is unchangeable, then what becomes these different forms in the spiritual world? Does the soul still made in a human form and have a body? Is it different?
Yeah. It is like the spiritual form that one has, that form is eternal.
Is that the soul or is it a spiritual?
You see,
form?
When you identify the person that is the soul. Right? But his body is spiritual. The soul, you know, when it develops a spiritual identity, it has a spiritual body. For example, in the material nature, the soul has the size of
so tiny,
1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair. Right? But when you go to the spiritual sky, is that the size of the soul? No. Yeah, unchangeable means the spiritual form is unchangeable. The spiritual identity is unchangeable. But that can also change if Krishna desires. For Krishna, everything is possible. For example, in the spiritual sky, joy and vijay, they have their spiritual identity, joy and vijay. But by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, they went back to Golok Vrindavan. And there they are not Joy and Vijay, they are Jagai and Madhai, two associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this way, by Krishna's mercy, change of spiritual identity is possible. But generally, it is eternal. The spiritual form that one has, that is his eternal form. And that is his eternal mellow. The service that he has is his eternal mellow.
So when so many people join Hare Krishna movement and worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and develop the love for him, then whatever swarup they fell from, now they change and they develop love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just become a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by his mercy, when you develop your spiritual identity, you will see how you look like. Okay?
Just a quick related question on topic. If the strategy of Srimad Bhagavatam is that the Paramatma, the Lord expansion of the heart, a disciple become just there. I was just thinking that in other living entities, like mosquitoes, flies, whatever, how does the Paramatma, how do you measure that the Paramatma? I mean, and then there are bigger animals also, bigger animals. How do you figure that?
The understanding is that is how, you see, a yogi, when once he sees the super soul in the heart, that's how he sees him. But is Paramatma's form material? Or spiritual. So can the spiritual thing be measured by any material calculation? So it is an understanding they're giving that this is how a yogi sees the super soul in the heart. And another way of looking at it is like this is the way you conceive of the Paramatma in the heart. Like for example, you have your concept of your body. In the body, the super soul is in the region of the heart. So what will be his natural size? If he's so big, a universal form, then he won't fit in here. Right? So for your conception, that is how it has been described. This is how one can meditate upon the super soul in the heart. Krishna is anar onian mahato mohiyan. He is smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest. Right? And so this is how we are expected to meditate upon the super soul. But that is how he is situated in our heart. And also not in the heart, in the region of the heart. Krishna is not exactly in the heart. Heart is the seat, but he is situated in the region of the heart. Like sometimes, I'm sure you also have been faced with this question. If you say that the soul is in the heart, then what happens when there's a heart transplant? right? Don't. What happens when there's a heart transplant?
The soul simply changes the chair.
Exactly. The heart is the seat. And when there is a heart transplant, the arrangement is made to take out that old seat and put in a new seat. Like if your chair is broken, then what will, it's about to break. Then somebody will come and tell you, this chair is about to break. So I'll get you a new chair. So while they're changing the chair, what happens? You just stand up. Right? Wait for the chair to come. And old chair is taken out and a new chair is placed there. So then once the chair is there, you sit on that. So that is what happens to the soul. He doesn't leave the body, he's there, but waiting for the change to take place. And that's why you need an expert heart surgeon. He knows how to take out the old chair and put the new chair back and keep the soul standing for a few minutes. Yes? Okay, I'll just correct you here. Soul is not situated in consciousness.
No, I mean, it is. It's fully
okay.
Conscious.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just fully conscious of what is beauty, what is all these things. It can't conceive through material senses. And that's
yeah. Yeah. Soul doesn't see things or perceive things with the material senses, but it has its spiritual senses. Right? It is not that the soul is devoid of senses. Soul has the senses. An example can be given. Can these glasses see by itself? Can they see? No. Only when it is fitted into the eyes it sees. Similarly, the eyes, which are made of matter, part of this body, can it see? No. It is when the mind is projected or connected to the eyes see. Right? If your eyes may be, some object may be in front of your eyes, but unless the mind is in tune with the eyes will not see it. Right? Now, does the mind see? No. Only when the consciousness flows, then the mind sees. Now, where does the consciousness come from? Just as it comes from the soul. Just as these glasses are an extension of my eyes, similarly my eyes are an extension of my spiritual eyes. Right? So spiritual body has the senses. And it is just the extension is through the material body is possible because the senses are already there. Just as the glasses cannot see by itself, it is an extension of the eyes. Similarly, these physical senses are an extension of our spiritual senses. And then again, the perception, how the perception actually takes place, what kind of physical, as you are asking, the appreciation of spiritual beauty. How does it take place? Just to give an example, say the child may be deformed and not, at all pleasing to look at. But when the mother looks at the child, how does she look at the child? She thinks it's the most beautiful object in the entire creation. Isn't it? Why? Because of her love. So it is the love that makes things to bring out the real beauty of that object. And the spiritual world is full of love. It's a world of love. Therefore, the spiritual world is of absolute beauty. Okay, who is next? You read from which verse? Very good. So what does it mean? So this is the achinta aspect of the spiritual reality. The spirit soul cannot, the body can be slain, but the soul cannot be slain. And the soul does, the living entity, the soul doesn't even slay anybody or can slay anybody. Because he is aloof. What is happening? Things are happening in the material nature, which will be explained afterwards. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha ahankara vimuratma kartaham iti manati. In this material nature, everything is happening by the arrangement of guna and karma. And bewildered by ignorance, ahankar, false ego, one thinks himself to be the doer. You have, Shamsundar, you have a chair or? Okay. So, the soul is not either the slayer, nor can the soul be slain. All these are happening on the bodily platform. It's one body that kills another body, or slays another body. It is one body that is slain by another body. Right? But the soul is beyond all that. Next. What about the Sanskrit? Very good. Oh, okay. So, pass the microphone. I think, Siddhilalisa, don't you have a part of Bhakti Shastra to memorize verses? What are you going to do about that? You have to memorize the verses.
Does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever existing, He is not playing the body is playing.
Very good. Yeah. So, here Krishna is actually describing the nature or the qualities of the soul. What's the quality of the soul? The quality of the soul is spiritual. A soul is never born, nor the soul will ever die. And he has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn. The soul is unborn. Soul is never born. Soul is eternal. The soul is ever-existing and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. So Krishna is reminding Arjuna that even if he kills somebody, he won't be killed. Only he'll change his body. Because the soul is indestructible. Soul is eternal.
I was going to ask a question. So if the body is killing the body, the soul is also involved in that, isn't it? Because for an action, you need the function.
Yeah. Soul is involved. Soul's involvement is there only because of his identification with the body. Because he's identifying himself with the body, therefore he got involved with the body. Or entangled with the body. Right? So what Krishna is actually pointing out to, telling Arjuna or reminding Arjuna, that you just act according to my instruction. Later on Krishna will tell Arjuna that I have made all the arrangements. All these soldiers are dead. So who made that arrangement? Right? But ahankara bimur atma kartaham iti mannati. Being bewildered by false ego, ahankara, one thinks that he is the doer. But things are happening in two platforms. One plane is a guna karma platform. As long as we are in the material platform, we are functioning due to our past activities, and due to the modes of material nature.
Karmic reaction.
And the that is karma means karmic reaction. That past activities. I act the way I acted in the past, that has generated the result. And accordingly I am getting the result now. Right? So that is one platform. And the other platform is everything has been arranged by Krishna. Right? So as long as we identify ourselves, then we are subjected to guna karma. When we are surrendered to Krishna, then things are happening by Krishna's divine arrangement. That is the way a devotee looks at it. If you want to kill me, kill me. If you want to keep me, keep me. It's entirely up to you.
When the spirit soul is bewildered by this body,
it
manifests its function through the body. Then.
Yeah.
Yes. And the more he becomes Krishna
conscious,
this false
identification
minimizes and he withdraws himself.
Right. Yeah. So understanding is clear. It's just Krishna is explaining the same point in an elaborate way. A person who knows that the soul is indestructible, eternal, unborn and immutable can kill anyone or cause anyone to kill. Yes, next.
वार्तापि जीवनानि यथा विहाय नवानि गृहन्ति नरोपरामि तथा शरीराणि विहाय जीवनानि यानि सन्ति नवानि देहि. As a person puts on a new garment, gives up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones.
One point, everyone makes some effort to read the Sanskrit verses also when you read Bhagavad Gita. Practice. Practice makes a man perfect. Women too. So practice and try to memorize the verses. You see, when I was a new devotee, I was in Calcutta, and some people told me that these devotees, these American devotees, they know the entire Bhagavad Gita. Because, you see, when they spoke, they may not know the whole of entire Bhagavad Gita, but they know a few verses very well. And when they spoke, they spoke with such authority, they recited the verses in such an authoritative way that whoever listened to them thought that they are such learned scholars. So for the sake of preaching, Prabhupada reminded us that it's important that we memorize the verses. So those, now that you are studying Bhagavad Gita very systematically, make it a point to memorize the Sanskrit verses also. At least some important verses, like this verse is very important. Vashang sijirnani yatha vihaya navani grinhati naro apurani tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani annani sangjati navani dehi. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Isn't it a wonderful analogy? Krishna is pointing out that our body is like a dress. Now, do you just keep on wearing one dress all the time? No, you change your dress. Especially when the dress becomes old or dirty, you take off your old dress and put on your new dress. Similarly, changing of body is like changing of our dress. Transmigration of soul. The soul transmigrates from one body to another body. Soul doesn't die. Then who dies? Tell me. Who dies? The body dies. What is the meaning of death? What is actually death? You just mentioned the body dies. When does the body die? When the soul leaves the body, right? When is the body born? When the soul enters a new body. And what is life then? The soul's presence in a certain body is the life. Birth and death is like changing of bodies. And bodies are like dresses. Alright? Next. Yeah.
Speaking of bodies, you were speaking about the job, you gave the example of giant vijaya. Their body, in what I'm saying, is their
when they went back to Golok Navadvip, what kind of body did they have? Well, you see, for a pure devotee's body, when a person becomes spiritualized, his body is also spiritualized. Or in another words, one can say that the body that a pure devotee is in. Pure devotee means your soul is spiritual. His soul is spiritual. Pure spirit soul. So his body also is spiritualized. In this respect, Prabhupada gives the example of iron rod and fire. When the rod becomes red hot, is it iron or fire? Fire. Similarly, a pure devotee's body is spiritualized. It is not material. Although apparently it may appear to be material, but it is spiritualized.
Body of Srila Prabhupada, the material quote unquote body of Srila Prabhupada.
Prabhupada's body?
Does it exist in the spiritual world then, in that particular
Yes.
world?
Yes, Prabhupada is present in the spiritual world with a spiritual body. And Prabhupada's apparently material body is also spiritual body. And that's why Prabhupada's body is in samadhi. Right? The samadhi means it's this body is in total absorption of Krishna's pastimes. So joy and Vijaya's body, like in a similar note you can say, what about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's body then? What about Nityananda Prabhu's body? Is it material body?
No.
Right. How do you know? No. When you said no, yes. So when somebody becomes spiritualized, his body also becomes Satchitananda. It's spiritual. Spiritual means Satchitananda Vigraha. The spiritual substance is Satchitananda. Right? Like, for example, now, when you go to Mahaprabhu's says, someday, when you go back to the spiritual sky, in Mahaprabhu's pastimes, you will see Jagai and Madai. Is their body material? Why not? Okay. When Mahaprabhu came and performed his pastimes, was it spiritual world that he brought in? Well, I mean, in this respect, maybe it's better not to speak of Jagai and Madhai. Let's put it this way. Like, say, your body. It's apparently material. Right? It's material. But now that you are practicing Krishna consciousness, someday when you become a pure devotee, then this body will not remain material. This body will become spiritual. Yeah, see, if you achieve your spiritual perfection in this body, then that will be your spiritual identity in the spiritual sky. Especially in Mahaprabhu's pastimes. That is the uniqueness of Mahaprabhu's pastimes, that, you see, what is happening now, what is happening now here, in ISKCON world, is actually non-different from Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Mahaprabhu's pastimes are still going on. You get the point. Because Sankirtan movement, ISKCON is propagating Sankirtan movement. Right? And Sankirtan movement is Mahaprabhu's movement. So this is Mahaprabhu's extension of Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Prabhupada himself said, there is an ISKCON in the spiritual sky. What does it mean? When you go back to spiritual sky after achieving our spiritual perfection, we'll find everybody there. Those who made it, they'll be there. Prabhupada is there. All his, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is there. Gaur Govinda Maharaj is there. Shridhar Maharaj is there. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is there. We'll all find all of them there. Right? Yes? Take the mic. So what's your question? Physiological way means there's change in your in your physical body also. That's what you mean. Okay, so the spiritualization can be explained in this way. There are two ways you can spiritualize yourself. One is your body and the consciousness is withdrawn from the body, right, and projected onto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what the yogis do. Yogis withdraw their consciousness from the body and project it onto Krishna, now the super soul. So that is one way of doing it, but it's a very difficult process. To withdraw the consciousness from the body completely is very, very difficult. The other way is, you have the body and you engage the body in the service of Krishna, right? Now, when you engage the body in the service of Krishna, then what is happening? The body is becoming spiritualized. The more you engage the body in the service of Krishna, the more you engage the mind in the service of Krishna, right? The body and mind and intelligence, they all become spiritualized. So Sankit, this is a much easier way. Because you have a body. Can you deny the existence of the body? Right. So to withdraw your consciousness from the body, is it easy? Is it going to be easy? No, it's very, very difficult. It takes thousands of years and still they can't achieve perfection. Whereas this process of spiritualizing the body by engaging the body in the service of Krishna. Can you do that? Do you have to leave your body consciousness? No. You can rather get fully into the body consciousness. You get fully into your body consciousness and engage the body in the service of Krishna. So that is the meaning of Sankirtan. The process that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave, the process that Srila Prabhupada gave, is this process. Engage your body, engage your mind, engage your intelligence in the service of Krishna. What will be the result? Your body, your mind, your intelligence will become spiritualized. So when your body, your mind, your intelligence is spiritualized, then what happens to you? You become spiritualized. Alright? Yes. Yeah. Give her the mic. That's why I wanted to have two mics. Shamsundar, do we have any more mics? Okay, maybe. Let's go and buy two cordless mics today. Because they are, yeah, we can use them for classes. How is he appearing to us means?
Is he entering matter or is it like a supreme lord?
It will depend on, there are two types of, say if you are talking about Mahaprabhu's associates or Krishna's associates, there are two types of associates. One is Nitya Siddha associates and the other is the Sadhan Siddha associates. Nitya Siddha associates come from the spiritual sky along with Krishna. Right? But the Sadhan Siddhas are those who are practicing Krishna consciousness and making spiritual advancement, and they come to a level when they get a chance to take part in Krishna's pastimes. Right? And by taking part in Krishna's pastimes, they become purified and go back to spiritual sky. The final purification takes place in that way. So, it will depend, you know, like, now as you are saying, like not in Krishna's pastimes, our devotees around us. There also there may be two types of devotees. Nitya Siddha devotees, some devotees may have come from the spiritual sky. And some devotees may be making spiritual advancement and coming to the stage of pure devotional service. Right? And it is very difficult to figure out who is a pure devotee. Because a pure devotee will never tell you that he is a pure devotee. Right? That's the quality of a pure devotee. He will always, I won't say hide his identity, but because he feels that he is most fallen, it's very difficult to recognize him. Also, okay, let's consider this point. Devotional service, more you make advancement, the more you realize how much of a devotee you couldn't become. Right? Like, probably it's a very common factor. when we are new, when we are at a neophyte stage, we think that we are pure devotees. Or we are the only devotee. But as we make advancement, we begin to recognize other devotees. And at a most advanced stage, we feel, a devotee feels, that everybody else has become a devotee, only he couldn't become a devotee. Right? So that is how it functions, it works. Like, not that the most advanced devotee thinks that he is most advanced. He thinks, the most advanced devotee thinks that he is least advanced. And the least advanced devotee thinks he is most advanced. It works in a reverse way. Right? So, when one makes spiritual advancement, he becomes more and more humble. And he behaves as if he couldn't even become a devotee. But from his action, from his speech, those who have the proper understanding, they recognize who is a pure devotee. And one thing you can rest assured is that pure devotees are not elected by popular vote. A pure devotee is recognized pure devotee is identified by Krishna. It's Krishna who sees who is pure and who is impure. The devotee himself never thinks that he has become pure. Okay, so many questions. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Ram Keshava.
But as this person becomes trying to be more absorbed in sadhana, inevitably there is a tendency of thinking that he is better than others, because others, they don't do that. So what would be your recommendation to devotee, how to, overcome this pitfall, how not to get trapped into this bad mentality?
It will depend upon the person's advancement. If he is at a medium, if he is a madhyamadhikar, if he is a second class devotee, he will see that, well, these devotees are not coming. They are not practicing Krishna consciousness. Their sadhana is weak. And he will tell them. Right? And that's why, you see, in management, one has to call a spade, right? If one is in management or in leadership position, and if he thinks that you are okay, I am okay, everyone is okay, then everything will be okay, but ISKCON movement will not be okay. So in management, the management has to point out, look, this is the standard you have to follow. And when you take that role, then it's necessary that you also become exemplary. So at that point, then you are practicing your sadhana, not only for your own spiritual advancement, or not with a feeling that I am better than others. At that time, he practices sadhana bhakti with a sense of duty of becoming exemplary. Not that I am better than others, but if I do not become an example, then how can I lead them? I can't tell everybody, you go to Mangalarati and I'll sleep till 8 o'clock. Will it be honest? No. So if I, when I tell everybody that you get up for Mangal Arati, I have to make it a point that I get up before everyone else. Right?
And in regard to this concept of spiritualizing or the body kind of spiritualize of a pure devotee, if someone were to measure by Krishna's definition, even an eternal associate of the Lord, like Srihariya Thakur, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the description is his body appeared to dwindle, and his body was non-existent by our perception. So if we have to see through this definition, how do we say that his body was spiritual or spiritualized in the case of the sadness that comes from the theory? How do we reconcile this with Krishna's definition here? That which is eternal,
You reconcile with the understanding that a pure devotee's body is not material. It is spiritual. His body is eternal. Right? Like for example, if you go back to the spiritual sky, you'll see Haridas Thakur with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? So first of all, you have to understand that you will not be able to understand the spiritual reality with your materialistic reasoning. You have to understand the spiritual reality with the spiritual concept. The body of a pure devotee, is it material or spiritual? Let's start from there. Okay, let's put it this way. When Krishna came, everybody could see him. Was his body made of material or spiritual?
Spiritual.
How do you know? Because somebody told you that Krishna's body is spiritual, that's why. But if you saw it, why didn't Duryodhan see Krishna's body as spiritual? Why didn't Duryodhan see Krishna as spiritual? Because Duryodhan saw that Krishna's body is functioning in a material way. When an arrow hit Krishna's body, blood came out. It's not that, you know, Krishna's body, this is Krishna's yoga maya. To bewilder the non-believers, Krishna makes that arrangement. He functions as if he is a materialist, he is a person of this world. But his devotees recognize, whereas the non-devotees do not. So in this same way, we have to understand that Krishna's pure devotee's body is also spiritual. But they are acting in such a way that it appears as if they are material. Now, those who are materially seeing things, those who are materialistic, they will see his body as material. But those who are spiritually inclined, they will see their bodies as spiritual. If somebody asked you, is Prabhupada's body material or spiritual? How do you know? Yeah. If you saw Prabhupada, you would have seen his body as material. You would have seen his body as material. When you're massaging Prabhupada's feet, you'll feel that his body is material. Right? Sometimes you pressed it hard, Prabhupada felt pain. And he said, what's happening? Why are you pressing so hard? Right? So how do we see it? When you see it that way, then do we see that his body is spiritual? No. Therefore, for our own benefit, it is better to see that those bodies are spiritual bodies. That is why the scripture says that don't consider a Vaishnava to be material. Don't consider your spiritual master to be material. Vaishnava and spiritual master, Gurushu Naramati. If you think that your spiritual master is an ordinary human being, then you lost your purpose. What does it mean? You have to see him as a spiritual personality. Right? For your own benefit. He may even tell you that, no, I am not spiritual. I am a conditioned soul. But still on your part as a disciple, you have to see your spiritual master as a spiritual personality. And how do you judge, as you are asking, how do you reconcile that? You reconcile thinking that for your benefit, he has manifested himself in front of your eyes in this way so that you can see him. Otherwise, could you see a spiritual body? Can you see a spirit soul? Can you see a spiritual person? No. So that you can see him, that's why he has manifested himself in front of you in this form. That is how one must take it, those who want to make spiritual advancement. Okay, next. Again, so the characteristics of the soul is being defined by Krishna. What is Krishna pointing out from all these descriptions? Time and time again, what's Krishna pointing out? That the soul is non-material. The soul is non-material. Well, I just thought of adding one point also to the question that, the answer that I was giving. I'll go to the extent of telling that even if spiritual master has some difficulty, sometimes it's happening in his form, but still as a disciple, disciples for his own benefit, he used to think that I don't understand, but in my mind, my spiritual master is a pure devotee. Yeah. Everybody should be advanced. Right? The leading devotees must behave in such a way that they become exemplary. And then the junior devotees will have proper faith. Like, you see, if we are giving the leadership, if we are leading, a leader must be exemplary. And it's unfortunate when the leaders, leading devotees, have spiritual problems. Then it destroys the faith. And this is very unfortunate. But what to do? This movement is new. And as a new movement, you know, we are going through various difficulties. But what to... We have to try to make the best out of a bad bargain. Right? And like... Ultimately, what really matters is our going back to our faith. What really matters is dying properly. Right? That is what really matters. If we die in the right consciousness, we'll make it back to Godhead. Right? Now, in our life, so many things can happen. right? But if we can die properly, meaning if we can die thinking about Krishna, then whatever has happened in our life will become irrelevant. So with that faith we should carry on. Like somebody may be having some problem now, but he has been a devotee for so many years. He rendered such sincere devotional service, served Srila Prabhupada's movement in such a wonderful way. Even if he is having some sort of spiritual difficulties now, doesn't matter. Krishna will remember him for all his good activities. But at the same time, for the sake of the institution, you know, we have to take actions when there is a mistake. Like this is how things are going to be adjusted. Right? The leadership, the management of ISKCON must see things in such a way that no wrong example is established, right? Whereas the devotees have to always have the faith that these are all advanced devotees. They have rendered so much service to Krishna. Krishna, who doesn't forget a single action, that one single devotional service that one renders to him. What to speak of this lifelong service that these people have rendered? Will Krishna forget that? No, Krishna will remember that, and Krishna will reward them in due course of time. So with that understanding we must carry on. Right? And everybody should pray to Krishna that please do not allow me to drift away from your lotus feet. Oh yeah, you read. Do you want to? Okay. Spiritual difficulties? Offending devotees. So try not to offend any devotee. Because you know how dangerous offenses are. Right? Especially the first offense to the holy name. We have to be very, very careful that we do not commit any offense. Right? So try not to commit offense. And always look up to the devotees with due respect. And you will see Krishna's mercy will flow. And that's another thing. Always remember that the foundation of devotional service is Shraddha. Respect. The more respect you develop, the more advancement you will make. So Adau Shraddha. Adau means the beginning. Right at the beginning what you need is Shraddha. So never ever allow the Shraddha to be affected. And when the Shraddha or respect for the superiors are lost, then the whole purpose will be lost. This consideration of respect is there even in the karmi world. Right? When a soldier sees a senior officer, what does he do? He salutes him, right? He respects. Even in karmi schools, the teacher comes into the class, what do the students do? They all stand. There is no place for joking. Everyone stands up, isn't it? Or they stop doing it nowadays?
Not in America.
That's why America is in such a mess. When we saw our teacher outside the school, so we just met him, we saw him, we would offer him obeisances. Even in karmi world, you see this culture is there. By doing that, do we lose anything? No, our heart becomes enriched. Right? You have Shraddha, your heart will be rich. You lose Shraddha, your heart will become dry. And in a dry heart, Krishna never appears. Yes? Sometimes? Yeah, yeah. I know, yeah. That's what I said. It's a reciprocal thing. The superior should be exemplary, right? And the subordinates also should be respectful. It's true. Like if the superiors don't come up to the standard, then they won't respect him. So that's why the leaders or senior devotees in the movement have a very important responsibility, that they set the right standard. And then only the movement will grow. Today, let's face facts, why ISKCON is suffering? Is ISKCON in an ideal state today? No. Why not? Because the leaders are not setting the right example, and the followers are also not developing respect for them. Now, is it going to help this movement? So, if we want to see an ideal ISKCON, what do we need? Tell me. How do you want to see an ideal ISKCON? Well, let me first ask you. Do you want to see an ideal ISKCON?
Yes.
Then what do you expect? Isn't that what you expect? That the leaders are exemplary and everyone is following them with full faith? So, it is a reciprocal thing. We can't say that we as leaders can't say that I can act in whichever way I want and everybody has to respect me. It will not work. Respect cannot be demanded. The respect is commanded. So we have to act in such a way that we don't have to tell anybody. They'll automatically develop their respect. Well, good point. You know, what Prabhupada said in that respect, not exactly in this respect, but I remember one thing that Prabhupada said, that if you cannot respect somebody genuinely, offer him respect from a distance. Right? Don't go too close to him. But your business is to show respect. So offer respect from a distance. But those who are exemplary, then you go and serve them. You try to associate and benefit from them. So, because if you want to make spiritual advancement, you have to decide for yourself where you can go and how you can get what you want. Right? By losing, see, what do you want? You want pure devotion to Krishna. You want Krishna prema. Now, because somebody did not become exemplary, will you go away thinking that, well, I don't want Krishna prema? If you think that way, who is the loser? You are the loser. Do you want to be a loser? No. So what should you do? You have to find the right association. You have to find the right people where you will derive the spiritual benefit and you can make advancement due to the association.
And until we find that with this way, patiently and with the non-Krishna.
Okay, yes. And Krishna will provide. Krishna, if you are sincere, Krishna will help. Thank you. So, in this verse also, Krishna is making the same point. The imperishable nature of the soul. The next the soul can be anywhere. Nitya sarvagata sthanu. The soul can be anywhere and everywhere. Because soul is not affected. Soul can be in fire. Your body may not be able to be in fire, but soul can be in fire. Right? Your body may not be, your body may dissolve in water, but the soul will not dissolve in
water. He doesn't mean inanimate objects. He can stay everywhere.
What is that? You know, why? Why?
Present everywhere. Can it mean also that he is present in inanimate objects?
Yes, yes. Krishna is saying, Krishna is saying that andantarastha paramanuchayantarastha. I am situated in the universe, in the heart of the universe, and I am also situated in every single atom. So the soul is everywhere. Yeah, but the Paramatma is, where Paramatma is there, Atma also is there. Like, the whole manifestation is, I mean, the soul is everywhere. Some soul, like, you know, according to the Vedic understanding, even the rocks have soul, mountains have soul. Yeah. Yeah, he is the soul, but universal soul, as the super soul of the universe. So anyway, here the point is that the soul can be anywhere. We may not be able to be in sun planet, but in sun planet also there are living entities. The sun planet, you know, like we can't even imagine how hot it is. Right? But they have the bodies which is conducive to that heat. So that is how the soul is everywhere. Soul is everywhere means soul can be everywhere, anywhere and everywhere. The materialistic concept that only the earth planet has habitation. The other planets are all empty. Is a misconception. Everywhere there are living entities. Like for example, when you look at the water, it may look like there is no living entity in the water. But when you go into the water, what do we see? We see there are so many fishes, right? So similarly, wherever we go, we'll find living entities there, situated with their appropriate bodies, according to their surroundings.
And the body is in material state.
In the material nature, all the bodies are material.
And the reason we don't perceive them is because of the different constituents of the matter.
You see, our perception is limited to our senses. Right? Our perceptions are limited to senses. Say for example, eyes are seeing light. But how much light does eye see? Only between violet and red? Right? But is the light limited only to violet and red?
there is an inconceivable number of light waves beyond violet and below red that we cannot see. We can see only up to this limited space. A simple thing, do we see at night? We can't see at night. But the bats, they see the night as to them, the night is broad daylight. And to them, day, our day, is night. They don't see anything. Because their range of perception is below our range of perception. Therefore, our range of perception is beyond them. Yes. Yes. So now Krishna is taking another angle. Previously Krishna established that the soul is eternal, immortal. But now Krishna is saying that the soul, it is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable and immutable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. Because the soul, if the body is lost, the soul will not be lost. And the soul is invisible, you can't see the soul. So, what is the... Knowing that, you should not grieve or you should not lament for the body. The next verse will clarify this point even more.
This, however, he says that the soul, the symptoms of life, is always born and dies forever. He still has no reason to lament for nothingness.
If, however, you think that the soul, the symptoms of life, will always be born and die forever, you still have no reasons to lament, O mighty Arjuna. Is that point clear? Is it clear to you? Can you explain? Right. Yeah.
If you look spiritually, there's no loss of body, there's no diet. If you look materially, then the sun product of the matter is also not lost.
So if you're a product of material nature, then what's the loss? All right, that's the point, Arjuna. Krishna is making to Arjuna.
So if he's saying that the soul is matter, that's what he means. That if you consider the soul as matter,
he's saying not matter.
He's saying that if you think that the soul always is always born and dies forever, that is a sub matter.
Yeah, okay. You can say that's what I mean. If you look at soul from a materialistic point of view, then what's the loss? Because matter is perishable. Matter doesn't last forever. Matter simply changes. So if you think that soul is a product of material nature, then yes, the soul will born and soul will die. So what's the loss? Okay, in simple words I'll say that if you have a foolish question, you'll get a foolish answer. That's what Krishna is pointing out. If you think that the soul is matter, then okay, it's matter and this is the nature of matter, so what's the loss?
So that means what he's saying is that your birth and death is finishing here at this point.
Right.
And you have got no question beyond that. So
if you don't believe in the eternity of the soul,
then why
then what's, why lament?
Yeah.
Because matter, this is the nature of the world.
Yeah.
So that's that point Krishna is making in the next verse. Yeah. Mitasya. So is the point clear now? Where someone is born, he is bound to die. And when someone is dead, he is bound to take birth. Therefore there is no need to lament. So just take it as it comes, because don't deviate from your duty. Like if you think, let's go back to the previous verse. If you think that the soul is born and soul is dying, right? Then there is no need to lament, because it will be born again. Because anything that is born will die. And everything that is dead will also be born. So why worry about it? And the point is, like, if you can't take the soul to be material and expect a non-material result out of that. If you consider that it's material, then be prepared to accept this material consequence. Because that's the law of nature. That's the law of material nature. And so, somewhat, if you think that your grandfather is going to die, but consider that anything that is born is going to die. If not today, tomorrow he will die. So why worry about his death? And anyone who is dead is going to take birth. So your grandfather will die, but he'll take birth again. So why lament over it? But rather be fixed up on performing your duty. That's okay, because you are not a Kshatriya warrior. If you are a Kshatriya warrior and you are in the battlefield, if you behave like that, then Krishna would have heavily, heavily chastised you. But in your position, it's okay. That's very nice that you felt that compassion. This is the Vaishnava compassion. So this is again, Krishna is pointing out, like if you consider the soul to be non-spiritual, then what's the loss? Because these are, Krishna is pointing out, these are the natural characteristics of matter or material nature. It's manifest at some time, then it will become unmanifest. It was not manifest, became manifest, will become unmanifest. So that is the nature. So why lament? Like after all, this manifestation is only temporary. So now Krishna is concluding that point. That some see this soul, look at the soul as amazing, some describe him as amazing, and some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. And what do we call them? Those who cannot understand him at all? We call them mudhas. We call them fool number one. Right? So now do we want to become fools? Or do we want to become intelligent? So if we want to become intelligent, then let's try to understand what Krishna is trying to explain to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita.
He who dwells in the body can never be cleansed. Therefore you need not grieve for any living being.
Okay, clear? So don't grieve, don't become overwhelmed with grief that in this battlefield you have to kill all these enemies. Even though they may be your relatives and friends, but since they are not behaving like your relatives and friends, if really they were your relatives, they wouldn't have gone against you. So they have opted to stand on that side, and you are in the battlefield. So do whatever is necessary.
Considering your specific duty as a Kshatriya, you should know that there is no better arrangement for you than fighting on the religious principle, and so there is no need of hesitation.
Okay, so this is the point Krishna is now making. You are a Kshatriya. Your business is to fight. And now that you are in the battlefield, what should you do? Right. So you are in a battlefield, you are a Kshatriya, you are a warrior. You did not want to fight. You tried to avoid this battle. Even I tried to avoid this battle. That's what Krishna is indirectly saying. I tried to avoid this battle. I went there personally. I advised them. I tried and see, still they wouldn't listen.
So now no retreat. Go forward, kill them all. That's what Krishna is pointing out.
Why is he making these different approaches? Like once he appeals to his Varna, like Kshatriya, then he says about the eternal nature of the spirit soul, and then comparing the spirit soul to matter.
A good way to teach is to give the understanding from different angles. So he's pointing out that this is your dharma, to fight as a kshatriya. But you have become overwhelmed, that you have to kill your enemy, kill your relatives and friends. So Krishna is pointing out that why are you lamenting? Because your relatives and friends, they're living entities, spirit souls. And you're not going to kill the spirit souls, you're going to kill their bodies. And then he's pointing out that everybody has to die. Sooner or later, everyone has to die. So why worry about, why become so overwhelmed for their death, especially when you're a kshatriya? So in order to understand Krishna's instruction here, we have to understand the nature of a kshatriya. In simple words, I can say that if you see that a lion is behaving like a cow, will it be desirable? Will it be desirable? No. Especially when that lion is acting on behalf of Krishna. Krishna says, okay, you get it for me. Krishna tells the lion, get it for me. And the lion says, well, I can't, because that other animal is my cousin. Right? So Krishna is saying that, look, I told you to get it for me. Go and get it for me. Still the lion says, no, he reasons why he can't get him. So then Krishna explains to him that, look, these are the reasons why you should get it for me.
What I thought was that he was saying that if you don't understand the higher principles and you act on the varnas principles, still you die.
That's why I said, like, Krishna is giving the thing from different angles. Krishna is giving, first he's giving the spiritual angle of vision, but then considering if you don't attribute those spiritual qualities to the soul, if you think that the soul is like the material object, even then there is nothing to worry about. Therefore, you just become situated in your dharma and execute your duty. Okay? Yes?
Just a quick question about the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita. Was it Krishna truly presented as a song, or was it prose? Did they speak it or sing it? Is song about a little transition?
In the spiritual sky, every word is music and every movement is song. And who is Krishna? Is he spiritual? So you got my point. In the spiritual sky, every word is song and every movement is dance. So when Krishna is speaking, is it song? Right? Because Krishna who is speaking. So Krishna, whatever Krishna says is music. Right? Somebody can give her the mic.
Oh, no, she has a question.
Krishna said that we are performing duty and get ready to Kshatriya. And earlier today we were talking about Dharma and acting according to one's own nature. But also we were talking about Kali Yuga and the kind of mixture that gets with that. So how are we to know what is our duty? In general, the reason that devotees is to act in Krishna consciousness, but more than that, or more deeper than that, what is our own nature, or what is our own duty, or how we can know that it's the real thing and not, you know.
Okay, I think you already know what's your duty. Yeah?
In Krishna's life, in Krishna consciousness.
Chant Hare Krishna. Follow the four regulative principles, right?
Yes.
And render devotional service to Krishna.
Yes.
So in the Kali Yuga, that is our duty, right?
Yeah, I know.
And, go ahead.
I mean, even say in the service, you have in your service sometimes, three times, whatever, but this is my duty to do these things, or this is really like not something I should do, and you know what I mean? It's like,
yes, I know.
It can be differently in service to Krishna, in service to Shrine.
Okay. So I'll just ask you, what do you think is your varna? Are you Brahmin? Kshatriya? Vaishya? Tell me. Yeah, but you see, the reality is, and that's very good what you're saying, the reality is in the age of Kali, practically everyone has become a Sudra. So our Varna, if at all we can consider that, is we are all Sudras. Sudra means servants, right? So we are servants of Krishna. Okay? And what does the servant do? The servant simply does what his master says. So whatever our masters, our superiors, or our temple authorities, our leaders say, we do that. Right? We become engaged according to the instructions of our authority. Right? And at home we try to maintain our Krishna consciousness. As I mentioned, like in this age, there is no Kshatriyas. Prabhupada is in the Sudra society. Prabhupada is trying to make the Brahmanas. That's what ISKCON's business is. Prabhupada said, "I'm simply trying to make Brahmanas." And Brahmanas, you see, Brahmanas' qualifications are quite simple. To be a Brahman is not so difficult in this age, if you have the right directions, right guidance. To become a Brahmana is not that difficult. But to become a Kshatriya is very difficult. So, in this age, since most of our Shudras, therefore, who is the leaders of the community, human society? The Vaishyas. Isn't today's world dominated by the Vaishyas? Although they speak of democracy, but today's world is actually a capitalistic society. It's centered around money. So capitalistic means vaishyas. Vaishya's power is money. Kshatriya's power is his strength. And Brahman's power is his intellect. So today's world is dominated not by intellect, not by physical strength, but by financial power, money power. That's why in the society of Sudras, the Vaishyas are the leaders. Right? Gradually change will take place. If we have the right kind of Vaishyas who are controlling the finance for Krishna, it will become spiritualized. And then the Kshatriyas will come. When proper Vaishyas are there, the Vaishyas will need protection. Who will give the protection? The Kshatriya will give the protection. So in this way, with proper Krishna consciousness, Varnashram will become established once again. So you had a question? Oh, I see. You thought we'll continue reading.
Yes.
Okay, right. No, I think today we can just... Siddhilala, sir? Okay, so since he has a question on this side, give him the mic.
So when we do service the temple, as you're telling, when we service the temple, whatever we are asked to do, we do it irrespective of what ashram, what one we belong. So doesn't it hamper the abilities, supposing the person of Brahman character is put into, Vaishya service, the person of Vaishya character is put into some service later?
You see, that is the difference between Varnashram and devotional service. In Varnashram, one acts according to his propensity. Right? But in devotional service, one acts according to necessity. Right? The leaders, or the temple authorities, they decide what is needed. And then they ask the devotees to render that service. And a devotee who is prepared to do anything for Krishna. A Brahman, a Kshatriya, for example, will never do the occupation or never act according to the occupation of a Sudra. Like that reminds me, there was an incident. The king of Orissa was to marry the princess of Kanchi. But the king of Kanchi saw or heard, actually he saw the king is sweeping the road. And he decided that he won't give his daughter to this king because he is doing the job of a Sudra. Of course, a king would not sweep the street. But because the king is a devotee of Lord Jagannath, he, for the sake of the Lord, even, there is no consideration of Varnashram. Like, in front of the Lord, everyone is a servant. Right? But this king of Kanchi was not so advanced. So he thought that because the king is sweeping the streets, he has a fallen Kshatriya and didn't want to offer his daughter in marriage. And as a result of that, there was going to be a war. But before they could even go into the battlefield, they found that the Kanchi king has been defeated by two persons riding on horses. One was white and one was black. So Krishna and Balaram went and fought for the king, defeated the king of Kanchi, and he learnt his lesson, and then he gave his daughter to the king of Orissa. Yeah.
In the same regard, we see how young devotees will do anything and everything for a few years, when, especially for example, the Brahmacharya giving an example, but after a certain amount of time, they kind of drift towards their natural psychophysiological natures. And Krishna himself speaks about repression, making repression accomplished. So I was wondering, on the one side there's this idea of do the needful anytime or anything, but we see practically, and there's this statement that Krishna himself was in conflict.
So I'll ask you, what happened to you? Did it happen to you? Why did it happen?
Why did it happen? Because the modes were just too strong for me to just be 100% listening.
I think it's a natural tendency. Because, you see, when one is in a situation for some time, he naturally assumes a kind of a leadership role. And for the proper progress of the movement, it's better, like, those who have been in a movement for some time, they're given some responsible positions. Because if somebody has to behave like the same way, like a new bhakta from throughout his life, Krishna consciousness will become very boring. So Krishna consciousness should be exciting. Give devotees more and more newer and newer challenges. And that is how the movement will move forward. So, when you are a new bhakta, you did something, and when, after some time, when other new bhaktas come and you become an old bhakta, then you let the new bhaktas do what you are doing. Right? And what old bhaktas were doing, you are doing, you are meant to do that. And this is how you constantly move forward. In this way, Krishna consciousness will become exciting. But at heart, and at the same time, at heart, for the sake of his own benefit, spiritual benefit, one must remain humble. Okay? So if somebody asks you to sweep the street, do it. If somebody asks you to wash the pot, do it. Don't think that, oh, I have been in a movement for 15 years, why do I have to do that? No, I am prepared to do it, but I don't have to, whenever necessary I will do it, but not that if all the time I have to do that. There are others who will do it. And since I am a responsible devotee, I have other responsible service to render. And it happens to everybody. I remember when I joined, you know, I was asked to cut the grass in the field. And then I was asked to bring the logs in the kitchen in Mayapur. I joined in Mayapur. And some leading devotees there, senior devotees there, they thought that I must have a lot of false ego, so they wanted to smash my false ego. So they gave me all kinds of service. And when I think back, I find it quite funny that, and it was quite nice, because at that time I was prepared to do anything what was necessary. Because I came to Krishna consciousness to become a devotee. And I was thinking that this is what a devotee does. A devotee cuts the grass.
So I was happy to cut the grass. Then I was asked to help in the kitchen and to cook the khichdi for public, for the distribution. And that is a huge operation actually. In Mayapur there used to be 1,000, 2,000 people come, villagers used to come, and they used to get khichdi. And the khichdi was cooked in an oven, in a fire, that has a fixed kadai. And that kadai must have been about 8 feet in diameter, in dia, not diameter, and about 5 feet deep. So what they used to do, they used to just pour the dal and rice and water and light the fire, and that's how they used to cook, and they used to, after it was cooked, they would take it out in a huge spoons. So it's a big operation. So when I went there, the devotee who was in charge, he told me to bring the logs from. This used to be cooked in log fire. So he told me to bring the logs into the kitchen, and he went away. And I thought, and outside there was a huge pile of logs. And so I thought he wanted me to bring the logs into the kitchen. So I just kept on bringing the logs. I filled up half the kitchen. So when he came after about half an hour, 45 minutes, then he saw the logs. And there was a, you know, there was a look of disgust in his face. That mostly he thought that I was the stupidest person he ever met. And then he asked me to take the logs out. So again, I took the logs out of the kitchen, back to where it was. And it was fun. But I didn't have to do it all the time. I just did it once, twice, maybe 2-3 days. But then I started to climb up the corporate ladder of ISKCON. And then finally when I met Prabhupada, Prabhupada just kept me with him. And so that's what I mean. Like, when we are new devotees, we may render certain service, but that doesn't mean that all the time we have to do that service. Okay, so today we close. I'll see you all tomorrow. And so read the second chapter. What you studied today and what you'll be studying tomorrow, read them very carefully. Are you getting some interest for reading Bhagavad Gita?
No.
I hope the classes are not boring.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.